Welcome to episode 2 of American Countdown. As we talk about the tick-tock of the clock on America's future, which sits at a precipice it has never sat at before. We sit on the precipice of an economic collapse. We sit on the precipice of the end of the constitutional republic our forefathers established 2 centuries ago. We sit on the edge of whether or not President Trump, one of the few people to challenge institutional power in this country, can get reelected based on what is happening right now as this pandemic is more panic than plague. So let us go into further in the opening statement section of the show tonight, what is happening in the country, and talk about what's going to be happening on the show tonight. We're going to be talking to Michael Cargill, a man who stood up against the attempts to unconstitutionally seize and steal power from him and try to invade and take away people's Second Amendment rights and liberties. And that story will have a happy ending, as we discussed tonight, but it's a happy ending people are not experiencing all across the country and the nation, as gun stores are being shut down, background checks foreclosed, rules being changed, and mayors from Champaign to New Orleans talking about suspending gun sales altogether, removing gun rights altogether, tracking people by where they're located, and threatening various forms of things like the mayor in Los Angeles did, who suggested that what he would do is he would actually remove people's utilities if they were still selling or trying to buy guns in that city, only forced to step back and step down when people threatened suit or brought suit. The attorney generals of Texas and the United States have recognized that Second Amendment rights are, in fact, essential services. Well, why aren't all constitutional rights being recognized as essential services? Why isn't First Amendment free expression of political activity being recognized as an essential service? Why isn't First Amendment right of people to go to church and gather with their fellow believers an essential service? Why isn't the Second Amendment recognized by an essential service already in the various orders issued by mayors and governors across the country? Why did it take extraordinary action of someone like Michael Cargill to make the difference to force this state of Texas to recognize what should have always been the case in the first place? We'll later talk to him, and we'll also hear from you later on in the show, and we'll be letting you be the jury and call in and inquire and ask your questions and try to give you the best answers that we can. But let's go to the beginning and talk about the factual update, particularly the factual update that's not being included by many of the mainstream media and the press as they push panic as a remedy for this pandemic, and they proclaim it's going to be the plague, rather than simply a virus that's more dangerous than the flu, but by no means warning and justifying this extraordinary seizure of governmental power by various petty tyrants across the country and the closure of the economy to the deprivation of millions and millions of Americans and ultimately billions of people around the world. For example, in the test today, there was a 12% increase in testing in the United States, which resulted in about a 14% increase in positive results. In other words, there's no exponential growth. All of the estimates by Governor Cuomo, by the UK, by people, by the folks that were pushing pandemic as panic was that these numbers would be doubling every 3 days and that would continue endlessly, that exponential growth. But that is in fact not happening. It hasn't been happening for weeks now in the United States, just as it's not happening in places around the world. Even in countries like Sweden, like Iran, like Japan, like Singapore, that did not take the extreme actions that the politicians here demanded be taken, and that the various members of the administrative class be taken. In fact, if you look at the day-over-day percentage change in the number of people testing positive for the virus, you'll see that the number's actually been going down relative to the increase rate and the growth rate compared to the rest of the country. So I think if we could show this chart here, sort of blow it up on the back screen, you can see that in fact, as we go through, it's actually been sort of slightly going down, and then the rate is consistent with the rate that's being tested. So you have people like Frank Luntz and others putting out there that, oh, look at this huge number of people who are confirmed as having the virus. That's only because more people were tested today. So there's no suggestion at all in the evidence that there's been any disproportionate increase in the number of people actually getting the virus than was already the case. In fact, this is more evidence there is no exponential growth of this virus in the United States to warrant a continued shutdown of our economy or to warrant a continued suspension of our civil liberties. In addition, we're seeing the same things happen with hospitalizations. So here we see that, you know, there are these forecasts is we look at that was going to be like this. It's going to be a straight line just going up, 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 up. But that's not what's happening at all. It's sort of flattening out and actually declining. Both the mortality rate is declining and the hospitalization rate is declining. So all this talk about 20% of people are going to go to the hospital, 15, 10% of the people are going to be in ICUs. We're going to need to quintuple the number of ICU units in the country. There's simply no basis of that from what we're seeing on a day-to-day basis. Will there be some hospitals over capacity? Absolutely. Just like there is every year somewhere in the country or somewhere in the world from the flu. That's because our hospitals operate at very close to capacity, and in poor and working class neighborhoods and communities, it's often the only source of health care that they have. So there's always some risk of that, but we're not seeing any disproportionate risk to such a degree that we should shut down our economy or suspend our constitutional liberties. Now let's look at what's been happening in Iran. So Iran is now tracking Wuhan. And what happened in Wuhan was you had an exponential growth early on. And so in the earliest stages that this virus gets into a local community, you see exponential explosion. Then it runs into a wall and starts to flatline and then begins to go down. That's why so many viruses have what they call a bell curve of growth. They find the vulnerable and then they run into people who are invulnerable. Those are people who either will simply not get the infection, like 83% of the people on the Diamond Princess who were exposed to this virus in recycled air for 3 weeks. The chefs that were giving them and cooking their food were infected. The cleaners that were cleaning their cabins were infected. And yet, even though that was a uniquely vulnerable and susceptible group of people due to the age demographics of who was on the ship, 83% never got the virus. In fact, when they tracked them in Wuhan, 95% of the people that were in close, continuous contact in confined quarters for days with people that had the virus unbeknownst to them, 95% of them never got the virus. Just as the fact that China shut down its supply chains was a warning sign that this virus was more dangerous than the flu, at least in its initial impact on a community, once China reopened its supply chains, that was a sign that China figured out something about this virus that for whatever reason our Western politicians, particularly at the local level, don't want to talk about, that some of the public health officials and the press don't want to discuss. Well, what's happening in Iran? If Iran was going to follow the same pattern as what happened in Wuhan, we would start to see sort of a death rate that would flatline. And that is, in fact, what's happening. In fact, the number of deaths in Iran are now growing at one of the smallest rates it's ever grown. It's growing at about a 1% rate a day. That is what happened in Wuhan. And Iran, what did Iran do? Did Iran shut down their economy? No way. They couldn't afford to. They knew that. Did they shut down their entire civil society? No, they knew they couldn't do that either. They limited what they did. They shut down prayers, which had a lot of people get close to each other. They shut down schools. But they did not shut down their entire civil society or their economy. And yet they're seeing the same pattern that was seen in Wuhan. They're seeing the same pattern we're starting to see in Italy. So the same pattern that it hasn't grown and exploded in exponential ways in Sweden or Japan or Singapore, these places that did not employ the methods that the local politicians are using as a pretext to seize power in the United States. What is trending in the United States, however, and in fact around the world, are Google search terms like can't pay rent. If we look at the Google search terms over the last year, see it's very low of people worrying about can't pay rent. About 3 to 5% default rate is the norm. And then all of a sudden, boom, it has skyrocketed. And why and how has it skyrocketed? It's skyrocketing because the number one association with can't pay rent is can't pay rent coronavirus. So you have millions and millions and millions of Americans who will not be able to pay their rent next tomorrow and the next day. In fact, I had friends and family members that I reached out to who tried to see whether or not they could just delay their rent payment by a month. But that isn't what, and what did their landlord come back and say? Not unless they had clear, specific proof that the coronavirus itself precluded them from doing it and then had a bunch of other extensions added to it. So there's no intention of the landlords to let people off for the rent, in large part because the landlords owe large mortgage debt on that obligation. So we're doing all of this while, in fact, the countries that are and those parts of the U.S. that are not imposing lockdowns, that are not imposing a suspension of civil liberties, are experiencing the same decline or lack of growth in the death rate, the mortality rate, the ICU rate that the countries that are using a lockdown or the regions of the country that are using the lockdown. So there's more and more evidence that the models were wrong, more and more evidence that this does not substantially deter or is not necessary or narrowly tailored in the constitutional legal sense to reducing the scope and scale and threat of the virus that we have today. And yet, there's still no remedy. The president is put under immense pressure, as was disclosed today in the press conference, where he has been led to believe that if he doesn't take the action that he is now taking, and he doesn't step back or push back against the local politicians and Western politicians using this as a pretext for a power grab, that he'll be accused of killing millions of Americans, grandma and grandpa. When in fact what is being killed is our economy, what is being suffocated is our economy, what is being suffocated is our constitutional liberties. That is what's at risk. That is where tick-tock and the clock of a doomsday clock for American constitutional freedom ticks ever, ever closer to a time period that we cannot reverse and we cannot change from. A good article on this that you can review yourself, and it tells a little bit of the story of what's happening in this context, is printed on Zero Hedge. It was originally printed on at Medium.com. Just a little tech nerd out in Silicon Valley simply looked at the actual data, looked at the actual reports from the WHO, the World Health Organization, looked at actual reports from prominent doctors and scientists in Germany and at Stanford, people who raised questions and doubts about what was being pushed and propagated, including the public health officer, the longtime public health officer who had recently retired from Ontario, Canada. And you can look it up yourself. It's called COVID-19 Evidence Over Hysteria. And in it, he goes into great detail using charts and demographics and data, all of which come from either governmental sources or institutional sources or well-respected experts. So you don't have to disregard or discard all expert opinions. There are experts that are challenging and questioning and contesting the institutional narrative that is being put out. And it details the degree to which the evidence shows there's no basis to be shutting down our economy. The evidence shows there's no evidence to be suspending constitutional liberties. Neither has been historically necessary or even proven to be medically beneficial to the ordinary American or any civil population across the country or around the world for the purposes of foreclosing this virus. In fact, there's talk now that, well, it might be the virus will kill 100,000 to 200,000 people. Any life lost is a tragedy. But let's also put it into context, and it's the context that is missing. The reality is about 100,000 people die every 10 days in America. We've never shut down our entire civil society or economy because of that. We have never foreclose the ability to exercise your constitutional liberty to go to church or circulate a petition or go to a political rally or be able to purchase a gun for your self-defense because of that. Yet that is where we stand today. That's the precipice we sit on. The reason why I agreed to participate in this show is because of how critical and how unique and how emergency this situation really is. We sit at a unique place in the country where our country has never been before. We have never been on the cusp of an economic collapse of this scale. They're talking about 35 to 50% retraction in the economy. They're talking about unemployment rates over 30%. In fact, a lot of the unemployment rates are only going to be mitigated in the stat sheet because of the various bailout provisions that were applied to the Small Business Administration. If we had an honest unemployment rate, it might be 40%. It might be 50%. That's the scale, scope, and severity of it. That is twice as bad as the worst time period in the Great Depression. That gives you a sense of the economic risk and exposure we face today. That doesn't even contrast or compare to the suspension of constitutional liberties, which has never occurred at this scale and scope and severity in the history of the United States of America. That's why what you're doing is critical. If you can share this link, share information to it by any social medium that you have available to you, whether it's Periscope or Facebook or Twitter or YouTube or whatever mechanism you have to get this information out there, you can help resist in ways that we'll talk later with Mr. Cargill. He had to take affirmative action. He had to stand up directly to the police officers wanting to shut down his store. And that helped precipitate change by forcing the Texas Attorney General to announce that, in fact, the Second Amendment is essential to the functioning of a civil society and can never be foreclosed or banned or shut down by any city, by any county, by any state. And that is what you need to do and what you can do by asserting your rights and abilities. You don't have to resort to the effective means of civil disobedience. You don't even have to resort to litigation, even though both of those remedies may be available to you. You can do so simply by educating yourself and educating and informing others. That's how you can make a difference in the world and the environment today. Now, let's talk about what some of the courts are doing. A court in Florida is sort of a template order for how the courts are responding to this. And there's aspects of this order that I think are good and healthy and strong, but there's many others that are disturbing and that are frightening and that are unsettling. So this is an order from the Circuit Court of Florida, the 7th Judicial District, for a variety of counties in Florida. I've had the privilege of handling various cases in Florida over the years, including in state court and federal court, appearing on a pro hoc basis, where you're allowed to appear as an out-of-state lawyer for a special case. And what's unsettling about this order that's issued, it's called a First Amended Emergency Court Procedures. And in it, the chief judge of the circuit is defining what he considers mission critical cases for the courts to handle. So part of the order that's good is it's allowing more using technology, using video technology, using phone technology to conduct hearings. That's a good thing. It's recognizing that you shouldn't force people to go into court that are sick. That's a good thing. The problematic aspects of it are what the court considers so important that these are the only kind of cases the court should be handling in the near short term. And what, you know, what's missing from this entire order is protecting people's constitutional rights. Nowhere here. Nothing about First Amendment, Second Amendment, Fourth Amendment, Fifth Amendment, Sixth Amendment. Not even a word about the phrase civil rights. But let's look at what the court's saying. They are here to help the legislature do. They're here to help the local politicians do. They're here to help the rogue governors do. These are the mission critical issues to issue emergency incapacity petitions and appointment of guardians. So are they going to start labeling certain people who are not in agreement with these various rogue orders by various governing officials? Are they going to say that they lack capacity and they need to have guardians appointed for them? Why is that precisely the high end focus and priority here? Proceedings involving requests for do not resuscitate orders. So nothing about proceedings for whether or not someone wants to extend their life and the hospital doesn't want to extend their life. Instead, it's let's make sure we can facilitate people saying, kill me now. The people facilitating various forms of DNR orders. That's what do not resuscitate means, which gets into the controversial question of euthanasia. That apparently is a high priority. That is mission critical for the court systems in Florida. And this is likely being replicated by courts all across the country. If we go further, it talks about the importance. And what's mission critical is anybody who's violated an isolation order, anybody who's violated an order to limit travel, anybody who's violated an order to close buildings, even private buildings, it's to make sure they have the ability, the police and the rest, to seize bodily fluids, to make sure that they can conduct mandatory vaccination proceedings. So it's almost as if they are already anticipating that they're going to do mandatory vaccinations against people's unwillingness to it. Maybe people who have questions or concerns about it. Maybe questions about its necessity. Questions about whether or not there are side effects that are unhealthy. This is particularly going to be problematic in the context of any vaccine for this virus because it will have not gone through the regular testing mechanisms to assure safety. Most of the people that have problems with compulsive vaccines are not people who have problems with the idea of vaccines. They're people that have mothers usually who have experienced the adverse consequences to their children that were not fully disclosed to them about vaccines because of special immunity laws that have been written for vaccines. So this isn't about challenging or contesting or questioning vaccines. It's about making sure people's rights to their bodily integrity is protected and that they have informed consent before any medical procedure takes place. And yet here we have a court that's hyper concerned to make sure that's mission critical that the courts have mandatory vaccination proceedings, seizure of bodily fluids, that anybody who violates any order of the government to limit travel or isolate or quarantine or anything else, that that order can be immediately and imminently executed without any question. This is a court, not only that, it goes on to say enforcement of curfew orders. So here you have a court that's looking at all of these things, curfews, mandatory vaccinations, seizure of bodily fluids, order to close private buildings, orders to limit travel, orders to isolate, orders to quarantine, including now the definition of quarantine being far expanded beyond its statutory statutory limits or its constitutional components. And what is a real constitutional quarantine? It is something where you have identified with individual suspicion that a person is sick, that they have a communicable disease, and because of it, you need to isolate them and quarantine them from other people in society. That's what a actual quarantine is supposed to be. A quarantine is not, let's have mass house arrest of people who aren't even sick. It is not, let's have mass limitations on travel of people who are not even sick. This is unheard of. This is unprecedented in American legal constitutional history. Our founders were intimately aware of viruses and plagues, and yet they did not include one word about them as grounds to exempt the Bill of Rights, as grounds to limit the right to travel found in the Privilege and Immunities Clause of Article 4 of the United States Constitution. There was no provision in there that said, by the way, in a public health crisis, you can just throw all of this out. There was none of that. They knew how dangerous and risky it was to give any politician that degree of power, that they would naturally exercise it as a pretext to act like a petty tyrant, as we are seeing all across America today in ways our forefathers could not have even imagined and our current older generation fought to prevent. The idea that people who went through the Great Depression and went through World War II want to see America forfeited to possibly extend their lives at the very end of it. They didn't spend their lives fighting for liberty and risking life and death for that liberty to see it forfeited now in the name of extending their life expectancy based on speculative models at the in the first place. This is a case of where we have a choice. We can have, if you were given, or if people in Cuba were given, the choice, they could have live in Cuba where they have a longer life expectancy of about 78 years. It turns out locking people up routinely and regularly in their own homes can be a way to prevent them from dying, but it's also a way to live miserably. Ask anybody in Cuba, ask anybody in the United States, here's your choice. 77 years of American freedom or 78 years under Cuban totalitarianism. How many people in the United States would pick Cuba? You don't see a lot of people getting on boats trying to get into Cuba, do you? You do see a lot of people in Cuba every time they can trying to escape to the United States. That answers your question. We know this question. We should never suspend constitutional liberties. We should never crush our economy based on any sort of pandemic panic that could possibly exist because we live for those liberties. We live for those freedoms. We live for that entrepreneurial spirit of freedom that dominates in the American civil society. And yet these courts, their first concern is not the constitutional problems with what they see mayors and governors and town managers doing. Their first concern is let's help you. Let's make sure they can enforce these quarantine orders, these isolation orders, these orders to limit travel, the seizure of bodily fluids, the order to close private buildings, do not resuscitate orders, involuntary appointment of guardians of people they're going to label incapacitated, mandatory vaccination orders, extraordinary curfew orders. Incredible. Of course, one last component to this order is that hearings will now be limited in the state of Florida. Now, if they would make sure that all of these hearings are televised to everyone, I wouldn't have a problem with this provision. However, my concern is that you're going to have courts now effectively closing the courts to the public. They can have secret proceedings that cannot constitutionally be secret proceedings under either the U.S. Constitution or their state constitutions. This is another frightening proclivity of courts who see this as an opportunity, who see this pandemic as a pretext to seize powers that never belonged to them in the first place and deny public control and democratic checks on that process. And that's just part of what we're facing. So consider in the particular context what's happening in the Second Amendment context across the country. So you have all kinds of people. Let's start with the mayor of Champaign. With the executive order in Champaign, according to the press, could include banning the sale of guns and ammunition and other items. That was the, now they, a week later, tried to step back from that, but that was what they were looking at right away. They were testing it. They were doing a trial balloon. Can we get away with completely banning the sale of guns under the pretext that that somehow has something to do with the virus? But that's not all. We have this headline from one of the other stories. Democrats move to suppress gun rights across the country on grounds of the coronavirus, including the mayor in New Orleans, who signed a March 11th emergency declaration, giving herself the power, said, don't worry, I won't exercise it yet, to ban not just the sale, but the transportation of guns. We have another story. The other way they're shutting down gun access is that they're suspending the ability to get the background checks and to have concealed handgun license applications and renewals. Ohio sheriffs suspending concealed handgun license applications and renewals. In North Carolina, unprecedented. North Carolina sheriff suspends new pistol permits due to an increase in what? He claimed, well, lots of people want it now that we have this virus and we're shutting down civil society and we're having police tell people, by the way, we're not even going to enforce a bunch of the criminal laws. We're not even going to arrest people. And not only that, while we're not too busy doing that, we'll just start releasing inmates into the broader population. And what's happening when you want to defend yourself, the Second Amendment? We don't have time to be able to process that background check right now. The additional stories out of North Carolina and Wake County, where they're prohibiting the ability to get any form of gun permitting. So they had to bring litigation there. There was the governor of Pennsylvania originally said he was going to ban all gun shops as non-essential, in his words, all constitutional rights. And then the exercise of those constitutional rights should be recognized as essential. They are essential to American liberty. They're essential to American history. They're essential to who and what we are as Americans. We lose that, then we lose America. But what did the Supreme Court say in Pennsylvania? That's okay. The government can shut them down. Now, over some very smart, intelligent dissents, but that gives you a sense of the risk that we currently face. In New Jersey, what's happening? New Jersey suspends gun background checks, halting sales during the coronavirus crisis. Los Angeles, they always go a little bit step further. Los Angeles to shut off water and power of all non-essential businesses that refuse to close. They're using their control of access of utilities to control the population en masse. This was a dystopian nightmare that they usually wrote off and said, don't worry, those are just crazy conspiracy theorists. Now they're an everyday reality in one of the biggest cities in America. LA County Sheriff, gun stores must close amongst virus restrictions. He only stepped back from that when people stood up for their rights and started filing lawsuits. Governor Newsom in California have to be sued by the NRA to reopen gun stores. But it's not just in places like California. It's not just like in places like New Jersey or New York. Here's in Tennessee. Tennessee rearm sales delayed by coronavirus. Why? The Tennessee Bureau of Investigation says they just don't have time to do background checks right now during the virus. What does that do? It effectively precludes and prohibits your ability to purchase a gun to defend yourself. As people have said, right now is when they want to get guns. Right now is when they want to exercise their Second Amendment rights, just like right now is when people want to exercise their First Amendment rights. In fact, it's the largest surge of gun sales in recent history, according to this headline. In the Bay Area, they talk about how local Bay Area areas are going to intend to shut down various gun shops. And in many of these cases, they haven't reversed yet, despite the Texas Attorney General saying is it part of the essential services that have to be left open. Despite the United States Attorney General and President Trump saying that, despite LA County legal officials saying that, you still have people in parts of Bay Area and California saying, nah, we're just going to take away your gun rights anyway. The fact check, did the New Orleans mayor's order allow a ban on gun sales? Well, and basically, yep, that's what the order could potentially allow. Even though she said, don't worry, not going to actually use it. Now then we have police in Philadelphia and other Pennsylvania counties stop issuing license to carry permits to gun owners using the virus outbreak as the excuse, as the pretext. And this is a useful context where we can look at what's really happening in the country constitutionally. When we come back after the break, we're going to be talking to Michael Cargill, someone who personally experienced this right here in Texas, someone who stood up for his rights, who asserted those rights. And by doing so, that simple act of civil disobedience in the ancient American legal tradition dating from Paul Revere to Martin Luther King led to the Attorney General of Texas stepping back and saying, yes, in fact, this is essential services. So come back and join us after the break, and we'll talk about it more. Welcome back to American Countdown. As we discuss what's happening to the constitutional liberties in this country in a unique time, place, and I'm here with Michael Cargill to describe his personal experience as one individual who stood up for his rights and got the remedy that was deserved and was right because he did so. Let me give you some background to Mike, who's right here in studio with us. Michael Cargill is a Army veteran, a guy who is a medal award winning Army veteran. A guy who's been instructing people in the proper use of gun safety since his days in the Army, who's a certified instructor for a certified CHL instructor, a certified range instructor, a certified chief range safety officer. He's taught literally thousands of applicants how to safely operate guns. He's the co-owner here in South Austin of Central Texas Gun Works. He's someone who has spent large parts of his life getting people to be able to defend themselves adequately, being able to protect themselves and their families. He is someone like Mr. Heller, who was willing to challenge the laws in the District of Columbia that said we have a Second Amendment right to protect ourselves. That's an ancient right that was put into the Constitution. It was explicitly and expressly stated in the Second Amendment, but it was also implicitly referenced by the rights all preserved under the Ninth and Tenth Amendment. So, Mike, great for you to be here. Tell us what, I mean, how did this all originally start? When did you first learn that there was going to be some potential problem with your gun shop?
Yeah, well, we actually received a threat over the telephone, several phone calls. Some people said that, hey, you know, what you're doing, we don't agree with. We don't like the fact that you're selling guns, during this pandemic. Guns are not essential. It's not an essential business in what you're doing, and you need to shut it down. And so I said no in so many words, not today.
Yeah.
And so we didn't. And so, you know, we kind of monitor everything. I monitor parking lot, everything. We have so many cameras at that place. So I saw a vehicle in the parking lot, knew something was going on. Then I got my attorney on the telephone. And so one of the customers had to leave. I let one of the customers out. And while I was letting that customer out, you know, three gentlemen approached the door. And I noticed that one was a police officer from the Austin Police Department. Another one was a fire marshal from the Austin Fire Department. And another one was a code enforcement officer from the code department.
And have you had any kind of visit like that before, with those kind of combination of state officials knock on the door?
No, not at all. Not at all. Wasn't, you know, didn't have anything like that before. So when they approached the door, I immediately locked the door, didn't let them in. And so talking to my attorney on the telephone, let him know what was going on. And so then I opened the door, went outside, closed the door behind me, and talked to them and asked them, you know, what were you there for? And so they told me that they received a complaint, and I said, I figured you did, and I know you're going to receive some more complaints as well, because we're not going to shut down. Mm-hmm. And so they let me know that, you know, that they were under the impression that gun stores are not an essential business, and also they want to make sure that we're practicing social distance. So
they told you basically there's been a complaint, that there's been a violation. Because my understanding is the city of Austin has issued a stay-at-home order.
Correct.
The county itself has issued a stay-at-home order.
Correct.
The neighboring Williamson County has issued a stay-at-home order.
Correct.
And at that point, the Texas governor had just limited certain groups from gathering, mass gatherings, but had not issued a stay-at-home order for the entire state.
That's right.
And so what they were saying is the city officials of Austin and Travis County have said, you can't operate your business unless it fits within something that the politicians have decided is essential.
That's right. And what we're seeing around the country, you're seeing this in California and other places, Philadelphia, they're actually telling gun stores and gun manufacturers that they have to shut down. And see, I think the Second Amendment is one of the most important things that we have, because they protect all of our constitutional rights.
Right.
And so once you lose that, then you lose everything.
Oh, exactly. I mean, you go back. I mean, it's amazing what people don't know. If you research a case, and you can find it online in terms of District of Columbia versus Heller, read the Supreme Court case itself, talk about what it protects. Because there's some people who seem to still believe that the Second Amendment is limited or constricted to militia members, or is limited to people that have, for some army or military purpose, they have the gun. That's not what the case decided. As Justice Scalia identified, the Second Amendment provides that the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And as the decision goes through in great detail, the right of the people means every ordinary individual citizen cannot be constrained in their ability to defend themselves.
That's right. And what a lot of people don't know is I actually open carry a Maxim 9. It's a 9mm with a suppressor on it. So it's actually a pretty, very profound, powerful gun there.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty big gun.
Right. Exactly. And what, in your experience, what do most people get a gun for? Is it just to have fun and shoot up the window, or is it to protect themselves, to protect their families, to protect their business?
Yeah, so during this epidemic here that we're experiencing, you know, people are going to need food, they're going to need water, they're going to need medical care, and they're also going to need their, you know, the firearm to protect themselves and also protect their family.
And in your experience, how often is that actually the driving motive for them to come and get guns, particularly right now? And how many of them are showing and saying, you know, I just decided I really want to shoot in my backyard? Versus people showing and saying, I really need this now to make sure my family and business is safe.
Yeah, it's a big driving motive, because the reason I got into this business in the first place is because I wanted to make sure that my family had all the tools they needed to protect themselves, you know.
Right.
And my parents actually live in Georgia, and my parents are at home. They're retired, and three guys decided that at 4:00 in the morning, they were going to break into my parents' house in the middle of the night.
Wow.
And kill my parents and, you know, take what they had. They actually broke into my parents' shed. They took everything out of the shed, including a ladder. They
Wow.
climbed onto the second floor of my parents' house and climbed into the second floor master bathroom window.
Wow.
And so my parents actually heard that. They kicked the plan into place. They actually shot the first guy, killed him, shot him right in the face, stopped him right there. He fell back and landed on the roof of the house. And then they secured the house. You know, they did exactly what they're supposed to do.
Right.
And so, and that's what this is for.
Right.
You know, they never would have thought in 1,000 years that someone would climb on the second floor of their home. They lived there over 20 years. And this guy climbed in on the second floor of their home, and they had he actually had a cell phone. When he was shot, his cell phone landed in the bathroom. On that cell phone, there were text messages where he was texting the other guys. He was supposed to go in and kill my parents, the other two guys in downstairs.
Wow. And so for you, it's both personal. It's part of what you do as your job. It's part of your occupation, but it's personal. It relates to your family, relates to what they went through, and it's why it's necessary and critical, particularly at this point in time in our history.
That's right. We teach it, we live it, and you know, I believe in it.
So what happened after they left that day? What happened next?
So once the three guys, the code enforcement, the Austin police officer, and also the fire marshal, once they left, I actually contacted some other officials. I said, you know, this is crazy, and I'm sure that other gun stores are afraid and they're shutting down, but I'm not going to do that. I said, something needs to be done on a much larger scale because not everyone is going to stand up like I did. So we need to do something for all the gun stores. So what happened was a state rep out of Lubbock, Texas, he's the chair for the Ways, Means, and Committee for the state of Texas. He actually sent a letter to the AG requesting that the AG give an opinion on where gun stores and gun manufacturers are actually an essential business. And so the AG, unprecedented, what he did was he actually gave an opinion in a matter of hours instead of like months.
Right.
And he gave an opinion and said, yes, you know, gun stores are an essential business, so they need to remain open. And then, you know, I actually tweeted the Trump administration as well.
Yep.
Because I wanted this needs to go a little further, because not just Texas, because, you know, I always believe if you lose Texas, we lose the rest of this country.
Right.
And so we got to make sure that we stop it right here in Texas. So I actually tweeted the Trump administration that something needs to be done on a national level about this. And then the Homeland Security came out on Friday and released a statement and said that, hey, you know, gun manufacturers and gun stores are an essential business. And so that helps us out in the entire country.
So simply by taking that stand that day, you could help trigger these set of events that led to Texas and the United States public officials recognizing that the assertion of constitutional liberties like the Second Amendment are by necessity, by the Constitution, essential services.
That's right. And what Trump actually, what he imposed was the Stafford Act. When that went into effect in the Stafford Act, if you go to the page 99 of the Stafford Act, it actually will tell you that, no one can confiscate your firearms, and it actually has a nice little section in there about the Second Amendment and how important that is. And that all came down from the Hurricane Katrina,
right,
during that incident. So once that happened, you know, Texas came down with something and had a Hurricane Katrina bill. Also, we have other bills that we have that went into effect as well that said, hey, you know, we need to make sure we protect our gun stores, our gun manufacturers, and also individuals and make sure they can hold on to their firearms and they're not going to be confiscated.
Now I think I actually have some footage of what happened. So did you take some footage of when it occurred, of when they came in, or?
Yes, we have some security camera footage, not everything,
but some portion of it.
That is correct.
Can we roll that? So so these are the guys coming up to your door.
Right. So they're coming up right now, and I actually closed the door and locked the door in front of them. And the code enforcement officer standing there saying, oh, wait, hold on a second. I'm like, no, we're closed.
Closed it right now.
And so one guy's looking at his watch there. He's with the fire department. And I'm like, yeah, you're not coming in right now. So hold on a sec. So I'm talking to my attorney on the telephone right now. And then so I'm finished up the conversation with my attorney. And then eventually I open the door, walk out, and I start talking to them.
Now, I noticed that they don't seem to be practicing social distancing.
No, not at all.
Exactly. And so they send three different officials to your doors. Because somehow during this kind of pandemic where we have other issues that should be higher priority,
right,
you became the priority just because you were allowing people to be able to defend themselves.
Right. You have different county judges and DAs around the country that are letting convicted felons and felons out of jail and,
right,
and not, you know, that are being charged and stuff like that. And they're focusing on little old me.
Exactly. And there's been orders by various cities across the country not to enforce criminal laws.
That's right.
As to a wide range of categories, that they're going to just simply, murderers are being released because of the risk that maybe they'll get the virus while they're in jail.
Right. And as you let these people out of jail, there's only a matter of time before something happens. As this goes on even longer, right now we're just in the beginning stages of it. It was just announced what's going to be another 30 days.
Yes.
That we're going to be on this lockdown here. And so it's only a matter of time before something happens and civil unrest starts.
No doubt about it. And so is that a lot of what the concern is amongst people that are your customers, is people that the reaction of the state in releasing these various criminals, of putting people on lockdown that are just going to react badly at some point, that public riots are sort of inevitable or inescapable, that people are going to see this as an opportunity to do things like they did in the late 1960s, other time periods, where we had sort of, whenever there's a window of opportunity to commit a lot of crime, somebody at some point gets the idea, let's commit a lot of crime.
Right. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. You know, when is something like this going to happen? Because how long can people sit idle by who have criminal intent and actually not act on something like that? How much money do they have as far as food and stuff like that? How much food? So, you know, most people prepare a week, maybe 2 weeks. So I say at the end of, this week, maybe come Friday, something's going to happen. We've already seen something happen up in northern part of the country where someone chopped a tree down. I don't know if you heard this story.
No, I haven't. Go ahead.
If you guys can Google this, someone actually chopped a tree down because I think it was in Maine somewhere where they suspected that someone inside the home was actually had the coronavirus. So they didn't want to let that person out the house. They chopped the tree down to let that tree hit land. And so they kept them inside their home and they guarded outside the house, refused to let them people leave the house along with the people inside the house. So, weird things like that are starting to happen. We're seeing this stuff down in Houston. You had the mayor in Houston talk about asking the criminals to not, please stop killing each other, wait until this coronavirus is over and then you can go back to killing each other.
My goodness. Well, in fact, we saw some of those headlines. Now, what are you hearing from other gun shop owners in terms of what's happening in their communities? Like we're seeing more reports that they're suspending background checks in communities across the country.
Yes.
So what have you heard in that regard?
Okay. So what's happening is if you don't have your license to carry a handgun, when you walk into a federal firearms license dealer, and you fill out the paperwork as with an LTC or a handgun license, then you can, you fill out the paperwork, out you go.
Right.
A background check's already been done because you have a handgun license.
Right.
When you don't have a handgun license, you walk into the gun store, you still fill out the paperwork, and now the gun store has to contact the NICS. And when they give that information to the NICS, they're either going to say proceed, delay, or denied. Proceed, out you go with the gun. Delayed, you usually have to wait 3 business days, not including weekends, or denied. But in this case, since we're in this era that we're in right now,
right,
instead of delaying you 3 business days, what they're doing is they're actually delaying you until either April the 15th or as far as April the 25th.
Right.
So they're violating the Brady Bill. They're not following any procedures that or laws or rules they're supposed to follow at all.
And I presume a gun shop is sort of has their hands tied, because if they issue that gun to that individual before the background check is cleared, they can have something adverse happen to them.
That's correct, because they say you cannot transfer that firearm to that person until this date, which is either April the 15th or as far as April the 25th. So you can't transfer the firearm to that person until that date.
And so those people have no protection during this time period. So what was supposed to be, hey, don't worry, it's only going to be a 72-hour delay, we're seeing that as soon as the opportunity presents itself, that becomes as long as a 30-day delay.
Right. If you drive around, drive around your town, your city, no matter where you are, whatever part of the country that you're in, whatever state that you're in, you notice that you're not seeing that many law enforcement officers that are out there right now. So you're going to be your own first responder if something was to happen. And so I don't want to be in that situation where something happens at my house, I can't protect my family or defend myself because I'm waiting, hunkering down, waiting for police to come and save me. I don't want to be in that predicament.
Right. And so really the bill is not being applied according to the terms that are explicitly in the bill, in terms of the Brady Bill and other background check legislation.
That is correct.
Nor in terms of what it was intended and pitched as. It was pitched and promoted as, there should have been a fail-safe in the legislation that if for any reason the delay was on the side of the government, not the individual making the application, not the gun shop owner, that would fall on the government and the gun would simply be released.
Right. So typically you're supposed to wait 3 business days. After that 3rd business day, not including weekends or holidays, you can transfer a firearm to an individual. Now, a lot of your big box stores like Academy and some other places, they won't transfer the firearm until they get a proceed. But when you're dealing with your mom and pop gun stores, and I encourage you to go visit your mom and pop gun stores, they will follow what the law says. After that third business day, you can transfer the firearm to that person. Well, now that we're in the COVID-19 era right now, you have to wait until April the 15th or as far as April the 25th before you can transfer a firearm to a person. So if you didn't get your handgun license before now, then you're stuck in waiting, you know, to get that firearm.
So anybody that's out there should apply now, because they're going to use these delay tactics as often and as much as they possibly can. So if you want to mitigate the cost of that to you, then you should go to your gun store today to get that process.
Right, because a lot of gun stores, what they're doing is they're saying, hey, if you don't have a handgun license and you're trying to purchase a firearm, then, you know, we're not going to sell it to you because you're going to get delayed. Over the weekend, this past weekend, they're going to do it this next weekend as well, is they're not going to have a second layer, meaning that when they call in the background check, and that background check is they need further review, they're not going to pass it to the next person and wait for a further review, wait for that person to give you an answer. They're going to automatically delay that transaction, and you're going to have to wait either April 15th or April 25th before you can get that gun.
Have you ever experienced anything like this before?
Never before in my life. We've been through, you know, Hurricane Katrina. We've been through Sandy Hook. You know, we've been through, you know, experienced a lot of different things. And I've never seen a situation where, you know, it's been delayed this far.
Wow. And did anybody imagine that gun stores would just be sort of unilaterally closed down under this pretext for so long, or as much as people, politicians have tried?
No. And I'm glad the owners that actually stood up and, you know, decided not to close down, I'm glad they did do that. And I hope the other ones actually open back up, because we need to make sure that the people are armed and can protect themselves.
And what do you think is in your life history, your personal experience, that gave you the fortitude to make that stand? Because a lot of people in the country right now are very afraid, very scared. They think bad, terrible things can happen to them if they assert their rights. I have other potential clients simply wanting to go to church. They go to church. People are doxing them. People are threatening to burn their homes, burn their churches, report their kids to child welfare authorities. What was it, you think, in your background and your experience that gave you sort of the backbone to make this stand that became consequential, not only for people in Texas, but across the country?
Well, I served 12 years in the Army, and I knew, you know, way back when I was in the military that you plan for a day like this, something like this to happen. You don't wait until something happens and decide that you want to, you know, prepare or prep for your family. You prep long before now. You know, I have a gas mask, you know, for everyone in my family, everyone in my household. I have a generator. I have, you know, plenty of food, plenty of water, canned food. I have MREs. You plan for things like this. I have ammunition. I have guns, you know, enough ammunition for every gun inside the house and enough, you know, ammunition and guns for everyone inside the home. So you plan for things like this because it is up to you as the head of your household to make sure you protect your family.
Right. Well, in fact, and if we go back to the Heller case, that's what everything is about. It's about this long, well-established right of weapons of offense or armor of defense. The Ninth Amendment, Tenth Amendment, and Second Amendment all talking about it. The Second Amendment express about it. If you go through, he talks about the Declaration of Rights dating back to the English days, Declaration of the Rights in various constitutions across the multiple states. And it's all about this right, ultimately, of self-defense, an individual right to bear arms for defensive purposes. That's what the Second Amendment is. That's what the U.S. Supreme Court has recognized that it is. That's why it is critical, essential, and fundamental to the human experiment and to the American sense of ordered liberty. And that is why it must be continually protected, and we need people like you doing so and being on the front line. We do want to get to one other topic, but before we get there, what have you heard from other gun store owners about what they're going to do? How many of them are saying they're willing to take the risk of standing up? How many are sort of wavering? What's happening?
I think the people are actually following our lead now. They're actually going to our website, and they're copying what we put on our website and actually using it for theirs as well. And they're standing up and they're opening up their doors. And I'm glad they're doing that, because we need to make sure that we arm the people.
Can you tell people what the website address is in case they want to go there and look it up?
Absolutely. It's CentralTexasGunworks.com. You can go to shop.CentralTexasGunworks or just plain CentralTexasGunworks.com.
And so that has all of the background information as to what happened and what people's rights are. As part of this process, how much have you been surprised at the way both politicians have reacted and the way the press has reacted?
you know, you know that there are certain politicians that are in this country, they're going to, you know, they're going to come after your firearms because that's what they've always said they're going to do. And so you plan for that, you know, in Texas and in Austin, which is the blue dot. I knew that if they got a chance that they were going to make that move and, you know, try to shut us down because that's what they've always tried to do. And it's up to us to make sure that we stand up, we stand strong, let them know they're not going to happen. We're not going to sleep on them at all. And I'm glad that other officials that are out there, you know, like the Lubbock state rep came to our aid and sent a letter to the AG and did what he did because you're going to need those people to stand up to the plate. And his name is State Representative Burroughs. Definitely, you know, check him out, Dustin Burroughs, and support him in his reelection campaign as well, because he stood up to the plate and said, hey, stop this. You know, you're not going to shut down the gun stores. You're not going to shut down the manufacturers, the gun manufacturers. We're going to make sure that people are free, you know, to go and purchase a firearm because we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know how long this pandemic's going to last, you know, how long this shutdown is going to last, or this crisis or whatever. But people need to, you know, they need to be able to take care of themselves because they're their own first responder.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's very much about preparation and self-protection and self-empowerment. And the first part of that is being able to assert your constitutional rights and liberties. And that's what it shows, the ripple effect. Any individual, by taking action, people who simply share the link to this story, share the link to what happened here, are in self-informing and self-educating people around the country. And what does that lead? Simply one man making a stand leads to a politician hearing that, going to the Attorney General recognizing what the Constitution says and enforcing it with rapid action and rapid speed and rapid time, that leads to the United States Department of Homeland Security and the Attorney General's office recognizing that this is correct, just within a 24 to 48 hour time period. That's the kind of difference ordinary people can make. That's the kind of difference we can make when we're facing this extraordinary crisis that is a true constitutional crisis, as we see politicians across the country try to suspend core civil liberties in a way they have never done before. And so that's how you can help participate. You can follow Michael's example and replicate that in your own life and as is appropriate to you, not only in the information you share, not only in the way in which you assert your rights, if necessary to assert it in response to a police officer or public health official or someone else, if they're trying to circumvent those rights, if in some cases as necessary to go to court where and when applicable, but also simply to share the information and to support the broadcast and networks that do it. As Michael was talking about, there are ways to prepare yourself. There's ways to be prepared. And one of that is to make sure you have your gun rights protected, that you apply for the background checks on an expeditious level as they're using this extraordinary pandemic as an excuse and pretext to try to preclude your ability to defend yourself, a constitutionally protected liberty, as the Heller case made clear. But in addition, we want to thank the sponsor of this show, and you can just buy basic things that prepare yourself for public health, things like simple toothpaste, things like Super Blue. That, you know, fluoride-free toothpaste, basic way to help yourself. This is from the sponsor of this show, which allows you to hear information you're not going to hear anywhere else. So when you come back at the next half of the hour, we'll talk some more with Mike, and we'll take your calls. And we'll listen to you, the jury, and what you think about what's happening and what should be happening moving forward. So come back after the break, and let's talk a little bit more, and let's discuss it a little bit more as to what's happening in American Countdown.
America first.
Welcome back to American Countdown. As we go into the further discussion of what's happening in America, extraordinary sort of dystopian escape from LA, escape from New York kind of scenery that we're going to be witnessing soon unless we get these things corrected and remedied now. Let's go to a video that goes into some of the details about what's happening in terms of freeing criminals and things of that nature in order to fill those cells instead with innocent people who simply want to assert their First or Second Amendment rights. If we can show the video one now that goes into some of what's happening in the country and why our Second Amendment rights are more precious now than ever before.
But it's all about forced inoculation. It's all about medical tyranny surveillance. It's all about 6 months in jail if you don't properly social distance. That's what the Chicago mayor is saying. And Singapore passed a law that if you don't stay 6 feet apart, 6 months in prison. Now they're saying the United States is the global epicenter. Why the whole country's covered in red the way the model works. Less people have died worldwide from the coronavirus this year than died of the flu last year. 35,000 have died. 21,000 have died from the coronavirus, supposedly. 35,000 in the U.S. 80,000 died, according to the CDC, in 2018 from the flu. The worst flu in years, despite record inoculation.
All right. You guys ready to talk about pandemic math? Turns out that in every single pandemic that's ever been recorded, mortality estimates decline over time. And there's a serious math reason for that. And you have to understand this. There's four things that control pandemic math. Number one, how big is your population? Those are people who are sick, but don't know it. They don't go to the doctor. They don't report it. They get better. They just never get counted. Little purple one in the middle. Those are number of people who have actually reported that they are sick and maybe have been tested. And then there's another number that no one likes, and that is the one in the middle. How many people actually die? Now, if you're questioning this, do you remember the H1N1 swine flu? In 2009, we all lost our shit when the WHO said the mortality rate was 1 to 1.3%, since they only knew how many people died and the number of people who got sick and self-reported. Two numbers they knew. They knew the purple number and they knew the black number, and we all went nuts. But 4 years later, when they had all the data, the WHO revised the mortality rate from 1.3% to 0.02%. I'm going to write that down for you. I'll do the division for you in your head. They reduced the mortality rate by 65 times. Is that going to happen with COVID-19? Almost certainly. But since up to 80% of people are going to have no symptoms or mild symptoms, I think we can deal with this.
Russia gate didn't work. Ukraine gate didn't work. They release a virus. They know the trajectory of. They know what it's going to do. It does kill people. It is a threat. But then the hysteria and the stampede off the cliff is the real threat. And President Trump is absolutely right that the cure is worse than the disease, and that if we have a depression, you want to see death from people having malnutrition. It'll just be called the flu. It'll be called an illness. It'll be called tuberculosis. But that's how you get run down, like in the 1930s, 7 million people starving to death. If it happens today, we'll never recover from it. And this is 21st century war. Infectious disease goes down, down, down to the 40s. And then it goes up, up, up with the vaccines that actually lowered our immunity. And they know exactly what they are doing.
I'm not gonna sit here and take it anymore.
It's almost like you're living a real life movie, like a film. It reminds me of the sort of the film V for Vendetta, and we'll show a clip for that in a second. But to just give you an example of how this is really happening, take what happened in Maine that Michael was talking about, where a Maine sheriff was investigating the fact that armed men apparently cut down a tree to force their neighbors quarantine. That's what was happening. People in the state of panic, just like you're seeing people like snitch out their neighbors, snitch out their friends and their family members. Here they took it another step. Here they went to not just report something to the state of this dangerous person because maybe they have a virus, maybe they don't, but in order to take action, they did cut down their tree to prevent them from exiting their own home. This is the kind of witch hunt hysteria that made the phrase witch hunt famous in the first place. This is the kind of lynching mindset that goes all the way back to the Old West that helped wreck this country in many ways at many places over time. To give you an example of this, but of course, to a certain degree, it has been foreshadowed and forecast by film. We'll discuss that in a second. We're going to take your calls, and Michael's been gracious enough to take your calls. So you can start to call in at area code number, which is 877. You can dial your area from your own country first, your own country code, if you're calling in internationally, and call in at 877-789-2539. That's 877-789-2539. Or if you're within the domestic United States, where you're allowed at least to call in these days, even if some states are saying you can't travel across state lines, despite the Privilege and Immunities Clause saying otherwise, you can call in at 1-512-646-1776. That's 1-512-646-1776. And we're going to take your calls from you, the jury, as you're watching and participating. Try to have your question down to a minute or less, so that we can expedite the process and incorporate as many people's voices as we can. But what we're seeing and witnessing was foreshadowed by no less than all kinds of films, whether it was X-Files or TV shows like The Simpsons or movies like V for Vendetta. It's a reminder of what you're supposed to do if you've been disobeying curfew. Let's take a look at that in video number two.
Those caught in violation of curfew will be prosecuted without leniency or exception.
It's past curfew, you know.
Oh, not tonight.
Who are you?
Gentlemen, I want this terrorist found. And I want him to understand what terror really means.
We're working on several leads.
Her parents were detained when she was 12.
It was like those black bags erased them from the face of the earth.
You have one chance. You must tell us the whereabouts of Codename V.
If our own government was responsible for the deaths of 100,000 people, you really want to know? Those who are responsible will be held accountable.
The time has come for you to live without fear.
I'm ready.
This country stands on the edge of oblivion.
I want everyone to remember why they need us.
Indeed. And what was the premise of that film? How did the fascist government seize power? What was the premise in which they got people to sacrifice their democracy in exchange for a totalitarian or authoritarian government? How is it that the United States apparently didn't just get infected with coronavirus, but got infected with Chinese totalitarianism, then managed to travel with the virus to some of our mayors and governors in this country today? Let's go back to the film's premise as to what the predicate was for that seizure of totalitarian power. And in a video clip number three.
If I am sure of anything, Inspector Finch, it is that this government will not survive if it is to be subject to your feelings. Mr. Dascom, what we need right now is a clear message to the people of this country. This message must be read in every newspaper, heard on every radio, seen on every television. This message must resound throughout the entire interlink. I want this country to realize that we stand on the edge of oblivion. I want every man, woman, and child to understand how close we are to chaos. I want everyone to remember why they need us.
In the former United States, civil war continues to devastate the Midwest.
Scientists attribute this latest water shortage to the lack of rainfall the last 2 years. Ministry officials expect water coupon prices to rise.
Police have arrested 9 suspects.
Can you believe this?
Reporting avian flu
going on all summer.
Outside the quarantine zone, a new airborne pathogen has killed 27 people.
Authorities have uncovered new evidence linking the terrorist organization called V to the St. Mary's viral attack on London 14 years ago.
So that is, in fact, is spreading the virus in a panic about a pandemic is what predicated their ability to seize totalitarian power in the first place. So this isn't just sort of cinematic lore. We're now living it in many states and cities and counties across America as they do a test case of their own form of testing. There's testing of the coronavirus. There's also testing of how many constitutional liberties they can strip from you without you saying something, without you pushing back, without you defending yourself. So let's go to some of the callers and the jurors who have their own questions. Let's go to Robert from Texas. You're on.
Hello?
Yes, sir. You're on.
Yes. You guys have just made the complete argument of abolishing background checks for any firearm, and I loved it. Point being is, it's infringed is sitting right there. I get the cases from, 40 years ago, from 1968 Gun Act to all this. they should be treated like knives, because right now I'm walked into gun stores or academies, box stores, whatever, and I'm watching these first-time gun owners buying, and it seems like the popular one, the 12-gauge. I'm like, buddy, that's got some kick to it.
That's right.
But what about the, okay, guys that are felons in their, when they hold my beer and watch this, when they're in their 20s, now they're in their 40s, 50s, 60s, and they've got kids and family, and they know what's coming on, possibly coming on the horizon. They're sitting back going, I don't want to go out there and get into the mix, but I don't want to sit back and become a victim. You guys have really just presented that. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, thank you very much. You're absolutely right. I mean, you look at what's happening is the great fear with background check laws was twofold. One, that they would be misused and misappropriated by the state to know who has a gun and to have a list of who those people are as a mechanism of surveillance to be able to spy on them and to be able to go to them in cases of try to remove their guns as a means and mechanism of self-defense in case of a particular public crisis like this where the politicians want to seize power from the people. The second fear, which was often not really dealt with but not adequately discussed, that we're now witnessing, was that they would use the bureaucratic ineptitude and bureaucratic obstacles to effectively negate your rights under the Second Amendment by simply interminably delaying how long it is you can actually get a gun, whether you can ever get a gun. Yeah, I mean, there's some of these background checks departments that are talking about they're not sure when they're going to open. Go ahead, Michael.
And then what a lot of people don't know is that if you're in a state like Texas, or you're in a state like that borders Canada or another country, you know, like Texas, California, then what happens is when you walk into the gun store and you buy two handguns or more in a 5-day period, or two long guns or more in a 5-day period, that gun store has to report you to the FBI and also the chief law enforcement officer in the county that you live in. A lot of people don't know that. Let me say that again. When you walk into a state, you're in a state that borders another country like Texas, and you walk into that gun store and you buy two handguns or more in a 5-day period, or two long guns or more in a 5-day period, that gun store has to fill out a form, fax it into the FBI, and also send it into the chief law enforcement officer in the county that you live in.
Well, and imagine also how the red flag laws could be abused in this context, right? So someone says, hey, I see George over there is going to someplace he's not supposed to under the stay home order. Maybe he's a danger or a risk or a threat. I mean, they're already making threats to people who go to church that they're going to try to report their kids and have their kids taken away by child welfare agencies. Why wouldn't they take a second step and in red flag jurisdictions say, oh, this is a red flag that they present an imminent risk to the community? If they're willing to report parents simply for going to church to try to take their kids away, do you think they won't do the same thing to gun owners just simply being in a position to defend themselves because they think their behavior is not in conformity with the direction of a local rogue politician seizing power? This is the problem and this is the risk. And we are now seeing, there's no question, no doubt, as other people talked about, any question that the government had and some of the Democratic politicians and others had to seize and steal guns from people cannot be questioned any further. Like, I mean, here in Austin, one of the first things they do is they try to knock on your doors. They're not worried about protecting the local nursing home, which is a particularly at-risk and vulnerable community. We're seeing all across the country vulnerable nursing homes where they have low profit margins, often underqualified staff, unable to be equipped to handle this, where there's the epidemic's breaking out. They're not going there. That's not where the public health officials are going. That's not where the local code officer is going. That's not where the local police officer is going. That's not where the fire marshal is going. Instead, they're going to the gun owner's shop, who has a long, well-respected history of making sure people operate within the gun safety rules, instructing thousands of people who've got government permits in accordance with that instruction. They're going to him to get him to stop selling guns and weapons to people so that they can defend themselves against private violence.
And threatening me with a fine of $1,000 fine and a Class B misdemeanor, which means that I can lose several licenses that I hold.
Exactly. That's the other thing people don't realize. A lot of these criminal threats, they may look at it and say, well, maybe it's only a month. Maybe it's only 3 months. Maybe it's only 6 months. Maybe it's only a fine. What they don't realize is all the things it triggers.
Right.
It triggers loss of license access, which triggers the loss of the ability to purchase or sell weapons or do a whole range of other activities. It can also lead to credit report impairment. It can limit the ability to get a loan from a bank, as they say, oh, I see this on here. For example, I had a family member who was falsely accused of something where someone else had stolen their identity. Because of it, it's going to take 6 months to get it corrected. In the interim, they can't even rent an apartment or house. because they don't pass the background check.
Right.
Because they're falsely listed as having this criminal history.
And these things here pop up on the background check when you're trying to purchase a firearm, and it gets you delayed in that transaction.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's the compounded. And that's where it's, I recommend people look it up, research it, review it, read it for themselves. The case of the District of Columbia versus Heller. Go to his website and review what he articulated on there to protect your rights. But there's wonderful language in there that you can, there's aspects of it I think are worthy of memorization. To, in case you have to deal with this in the real life going forward, whether you're a gun shop owner or someone who wishes to purchase a gun, or simply to be able to have the background check process go correctly and go timely, or whether you're someone who is threatened to some sort of risk because of your gun ownership. And what those cases talk about is the right to enable individuals to defend themselves. Americans understand this right of self-preservation as permitting a citizen to rebel force by force when the intervention of society in his behalf may be too late to prevent an injury. That was the constitutional foundation for our founding fathers to articulate and express this within the Second Amendment to the United States Constitution. You can read it yourself in the opinion of the court. It is the law of the land. It is the protected law of the land. And we should make sure people continue to assert this, because these rights are only as good as you do what Michael does and assert them. So let's go to another caller. Let's go to Patrick in California. Patrick?
Hi, Robert. Thank you for taking my call. I'm here in Southern California, and I'm just more concerned with people not being – they're more concerned about the COVID virus than their liberties. They're kind of in a scared state. So how do you wake them up? And the B question was, what would you say to President Trump if you were advising him right now?
So say two things. For number one, it's like the old Michael Jordan commercials, or it's like the old Life Cereals commercials. Be like Mike. If you be like Mike, then you have an opportunity to make the changes, to make the difference, assert your rights. Don't let fear govern you. Don't let fear control you. Don't let the paranoia and the panic about the pandemic get you to forfeit the constitutional liberties and rights your grandfather, your great-grandfather, your great-great-grandfather either came here to enjoy from somewhere else or fought for to get in the first place. So that's part one. Be like Mike. That's the answer to asserting your constitutional rights and remedies. And it's the only way that we will be able to protect those rights and remedies moving forward. We can only lose them if we forfeit them. If as long as we assert them, we have the means to keep them. So just like there's a right to keep and bear arms, the best way to keep and bear arms is to assert, to keep and bear your rights, and to do so repeatedly. The same way you would show a weapon to someone who's a potential threat to you to try to deter that threat, you pull out the Constitution and assert your rights so that you can be able to protect those, to keep and bear those as we move forward for all Americans. As to what to say to President Trump, I think the reality is the president, he's responded to me, I think, last week. He wants the economy to be reopened. He wants society to be reopened. He clearly doesn't favor what's happening in the suspension of civil liberties. The federal government hasn't suspended any civil liberties. What's happening is this is all happening at the local and county and state government level, disproportionately by Democrats, but in some cases others as well, who are restricting these rights and asserting this as an opportunity, as a pretext, to claim powers they do not have. So what we can do, and what the president needs, is he needs the message from people like you, from support from people like you, spreading the message of support, spreading the link to this site, to these articles, to this story, to this video, to other videos, because he needs to hear from his base. Because everybody around him, everybody that surrounds him, would have the economy completely sink, would have our civil society ripped apart, would have our constitutional liberties forfeited forever, because it's not what they care about. The reality is, when you see these press conferences with many of the public health officials that are up there, do you really believe any of them voted for Donald Trump in 2016? Do you believe any of them care about Donald Trump's reelection in 2020? The press clearly wants his defeat. The press sees this pandemic and the panic about the pandemic as the perfect opportunity to take away his Trump card of the election, which they've already partially achieved. He recognizes this, but he has all these people around him, surrounding him, saying something different. They're saying, if you do this, Mr. President, millions of Americans are going to die and it's going to be your fault. So what is he supposed to do in that context? Unless he hears from you, the public, the audience, in the discussion in the Heller case, it's all about the right of the people. Well, the president needs to hear from the people. He needs to hear them by you educating yourself about your rights and what's going on, educating others about your rights and what's going on, and also educating your political officials and public officials about what's going on. By the president hearing from you and hearing the volume of what you say, that is the best means to get the president to be able to feel, hey, he has enough wind in his sails that he can push back against all of this power that's trying to get him to go down the current path.
And if you don't remember anything, remember this. A man's rights rest in three boxes. The ballot box, the jury box, and the cartridge box.
That's exactly right. And the only way you keep those powers, the only way you assert those powers, the only way you be able to have those powers is by constantly staying vigilant. That is the key to the way things work. Otherwise, you end up with sort of a V for Vendetta world. And if we're going to fight that, if we're going to resist that, if we're going to compete against that, we have to remember who we are, stay self-informed, stay self-educated, stay involved, stay connected, and that can make the difference. So thanks for calling in. Let's go to the next juror. Let's go to Dave from Montana.
Yeah, Robert, are you there?
I'm here. Go ahead.
Hey, great job, Robert. And Mike, my question is for you. I did not know that long guns, that if you bought two in a five-day period, you were reported to the FBI. My question to you is this. Does that apply to AR-15 uppers?
No, it does not. It does not apply to the lower receiver by itself. It does not apply to the upper. It applies only to the complete rifle. And that's only if you're in a state that borders like another country.
Wow. Thank you very much. That's all I've got. Great job, gentlemen. Really enjoyed the show.
And also a way around that, it also is, it doesn't apply if you're a manufacturer. So if a FFL has a manufacturer's license, they don't have to report the long gun sales. They only have to report the handgun sales.
Wow. What about, 80% lowers?
Doesn't apply to 80% lowers either. So no lower receiver, you know, it only applies to the complete rifle.
Complete rifle. Well done. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much. We're going to go to another call here in a second. I do want to thank again our sponsor, who is one of the few places that if you've been watching places like InfoWars over the years, places of independent sites and independent information, then you're aware. You've had the red pill for a long time. You can get the real red pill right now for 50% off. Provides means to boost your immune system, to make you healthier, natural, organic kind of products, the best combination. Basically, it's the best available product at the lowest available price, and it's there to make to not only help support independent information sources like this, but also to protect your own health, to prepare. As Michael said earlier, the best way to defend yourself is to prepare. The best way to assert, to have your rights protected is to assert yourself. And so you can go now, get 50% off at InfoWarsStore.com. You can get the real red pill. You can get things like Super Silver. You can get things like skin cream, which given that everybody's washing their hands every 5 seconds these days is probably advisable. So you can get all of these things that have some of the best products that people have tested on themselves. All the review rates, you can review yourself. The reviews are off the charts for almost all of these things. So we appreciate the way InfoWars Store, one of the few places that makes sure that independent information gets out there, that makes sure that all opinions are heard, not just the establishment perspective, not just the politician's perspective. We're not going to be somebody who's a stenographer simply repeating what the local politician said. Someone to bring independent information that challenges establishment opinion, that gives you the right to, for you to decide, to make sure everybody's participating in the public square, and you, the jury, should be the ones deciding what's true and what's right. You shouldn't have a politician telling you what you can think and how you can think and what information is correct versus what information they don't want you to hear. So let you decide, let you exercise the faculty of reason and the conscience of man, which are the two great restraints on abuse of power anywhere and everywhere throughout human history. Let us go. I think we have time for one more question before Michael leaves. Let's go to Richard in Texas.
So I'll just make it quick because you hit a lot of the things I was going to say, but I'm just north of you guys in Williamson County, and our county judge issued an order basically locking everyone down, closing all the churches. Immediately, I emailed the Alliance Defense Fund and asked them to file suit, and they said they wouldn't file suit of any on behalf of any individual citizen, only on behalf of the senior pastor of a church, so I got nowhere with that. Tried emailing Governor Abbott, got no response from his staff. I do like Mr. Cargill's suggestion of going to the AG. I hadn't thought of that, so I'm going to try that next and also contact my representative. But I also wanted to add to your point about why it's so important to write your elected representatives right now is because in addition to what's going on right now, there's a geopolitical move of all these major corporations trying to flip states. And that's why Apple and SpaceX and Dell and all these companies are investing so much in Texas because they know if they flip Texas, it will be impossible for a Republican to ever be elected president ever again. And that's why we need to not just fight for the rights they're trying to take away right now, especially in battleground states. We need to especially say, explain this issue to the representatives, put it plainly out for them and say, if we don't protect ourselves with stronger local laws right now, you will not have the option to change it in the future because there will be no possibility of a majority. So with that, leave you with that, and thanks for taking my call.
You're right. We got to hold Texas because if we lose Texas, we're going to lose the rest of this country.
I mean, no doubt about it. And you, the reaching out to your public officials is the right step. There's a wide range of legal remedies that may be available. I'm part of a team of lawyers looking at various cases we can bring across the country. We're going to help as many people as we can, try to find affordable, accessible means of that happening. If you have a question or inquiry, you can either go to freeamericalawcenter.com and file and send in your comments or interest as to that issue. Or you can go to barneslawllp.com and we'll try to respond to as many people as we can, try to assist as many people as we reasonably can, and try to find other legal advisors or lawyers that can help and try to take a necessary remedial action. But there's no doubt whatsoever that the only way in which you're going to protect your rights is to protect yourself now, prepare accordingly, be able to put yourself in a position where you have the things in your home that you need to be able to protect and defend yourself, while at the same time, the only way you are able to keep your rights is to be like Mike and assert your rights. And that's going to be the key moving forward. So I want to thank Mike for coming in and for helping out, sharing his time, sharing his story, sharing what happened. Can you go ahead and give them again your website that they can go to find information about this?
Absolutely. Please go to CentralTexasGunworks.com. You can go to CentralTexasGunworks.com. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter, on Instagram, and check us out there. And our other page there is shop.CentralTexasGunworks.com.
Fantastic. Be like Mike, folks. That's the way to be able to resist this kind of tyranny. That's the way to be the necessary example against the effort of this unconstitutional actions, this unprecedented unconstitutional actions that threaten the core liberty in our foundational republic. This show is called American Countdown. You can find the videos at AmericanCountdown.news. Why? Because we're literally, it's tick-tock on the clock with just seconds away from a doomsday clock that could end not only our economy, but the constitutional experiment that we've had for 200 years. So come back after the break. Welcome back to American Countdown. And we'll take a few more of your calls. But to give you a sense of the world in which we reside, where TV scripts that are apocalyptic are what come true, the dystopia that we're witnessing today, to give some sort of context for it, let's just show you another part of The Simpsons, which forecast something like this years ago, and then see how it's really happening today in America. So let's go to clip number 5.
I'd like to call to order this secret conclave of America's media empires. We're here to come up with the next phony baloney crisis to put Americans back where they belong, in dark rooms glued to their televisions too terrified to skip the commercials.
Well, I think...
NBC, you are here to listen and not speak. I think we should go with a good old-fashioned public health scare.
A new disease. No one's immune. It's like the summer of the shark, except instead of a shark, it's an epidemic. And instead of summer, it's all the time.
Now, I hate to be the guy who derails what everybody else loves.
He loves being that guy.
But, Janice, we do have standards. This can't be a made-up disease. The only moral thing to do is release a deadly virus into the general public.
We do have something we've been holding on to, but it hasn't been tested. Get over here, NBC.
Well, we certainly believe in testing, but I... Wow.
So, we've got our deadly disease.
No, we just have to blame it on something that's in every household, something that people are a little bit afraid of already.
House cat flu is coming, people. The Center for Disease Disinformation predicts with some degree of probability that the house cat flu might spread in the following hypothetical outbreak pattern. So, petter beware, that warm body on your lap just might be ready to destroy your tender vittles. Springfielders are advised to stay tuned for more information if they experience any of the following symptoms. Mild thirst, occasional hunger, tiredness at night.
Gotta get a juicer, gotta drink juice, lose weight, won't get chest pain from answering the phone anymore.
Please don't tell the supervisor I have the flu.
I've been working with a shattered pelvis for 3 weeks.
Oh, my juice loosener is never going to come.
Hey, Dad, this came for you in the mail.
Woohoo!
Happy birthday. Happy birthday.
What the?
The dreaded Osaka flu has hit Springfield with over 300 cases now reported. Now over to Arnie Pie with Arnie in the Sky.
Rap 401 is going around and around and around and around and around. And look out at the corner of 12th and Main because I'm going to be sick. Whoop.
Okay, Mr. Sun, give me what you got.
Ah! 98.6. You're fine. Now hurry up or you'll miss your bus.
Maybe you better take that temperature one more time.
Sarge, we keep getting orders to let the virus win.
Must be a school day. Lay down your arms.
All right. Let's make some puffs.
I'd like to call to order this secret.
That's the world in which we exist. And if you don't believe that the media is not trying to create any kind of panic about this pandemic, rather than having a reasoned response to it, rather than the encouraging politicians to have a narrowly tailored response to this, instead of the sort of mass panic and mass house arrest that they've been engaged in, mass violation of constitutional liberties, mass deprivation of economic freedom. Just look at what they did today with the Empire State Building. Take a look at clip number 6 as we look at what they chose to make the Empire State Building look like and ask yourself, is that something that makes you feel more relaxed, more at peace? Or is that meant to terrify? Is that meant to frighten? Is that meant to put people in such a mental condition that they do whatever the government tells them to do or the local politicians tell them to do? To such a degree, they're ratting out their friends, their family, and their neighbors. To the degree, they're calling in and making threats to people about how they're going to burn down their homes or churches if they simply go to church because they fear that kind of fear-mongering taking place at the highest levels of our society. They are one of the biggest buildings in America turned into a frightening, terrifying siren meant to create an effect that can only have an effect of frightening and terrifying people. It's not something that's relaxing or resting. And note they came up with this a day after that sort of much more peaceful, promising message of the medical ship pulling in next to the Statue of Liberty in New York. The day after that happens, which people like Rachel Maddow said would never happen, the day after that happens, you see people, you see this put out instead. Meant to shock, meant to scare, meant to intimidate, meant to terrify. Could only have that effect. And if you want to take it even further, listen to the Democratic mayor of Houston, who suggests that the way all crime is going to be solved, even when people are not going to be arrested, when people are going to be released in many capacities. Well, what does he say his answer is? Well, let's look at that in clip number 7.
And let me just make my plea. Until the coronavirus is resolved, criminals take a break. Okay? Stay home. Okay? Stay home. And don't commit any crimes. And that way, they'll stay safe and out of jail. And police officers will stay safe and can go home to their families. Okay? So everybody chill. Crooks, criminals, you chill. Wait till the coronavirus is over. Okay. And then we'll all be okay.
And then what? That's when you get to commit a crime? That they're being released from jails for the crimes they've already committed. They're being released from jails and prisons for crimes they've been charged and accused of. They're being not being arrested by various, like the people in Cincinnati and other political officials saying, by the way, there's a whole bunch of things we're no longer going to arrest you for. So if you go, you want to go to the 7-Eleven, you want $500 worth of groceries, just walk in and take them, because in many cities, counties, and states, they're suggesting, implying, or explicitly stating in some context, they're not going to arrest you. But don't worry, you can just chill. Does that make you feel more safe, especially while they're trying to deprive you of your Second Amendment rights and liberties in this context, when there's police stand down orders and inmate releases, that the criminals are just going to chill? Well, let's ask somebody from the jury. Let's take a call from Joe in Florida. Joe, you're on.
Hi, Rob. I'll tell you, I'm looking at the newspaper today, and we just talked about, you know, the attacks on guns. I'm a gun owner. I'm also a Christian. And I see attack on a Trump supporter and good friend of Alex Jones, Pastor Rodney Howard Brown, was arrested in Tampa this past weekend for having a service that was in violation of the law, the coronavirus. You know, it just goes on and on and on. And firm support of the Constitution and but can't assemble. So I think the only thing we can do here, and what I need is next to my InfoWars bumper sticker in the back of my van, I need a bumper sticker from Robert Barnes and his organization as well. I'm going to put it right next to my InfoWars bumper sticker.
Well, thank you for that. There's no question that people need to find ways to assert their remedies, to assert every form of mechanism of resistance, real resistance, not the fake resistance that exists against President Trump, but real resistance against these rogue politicians threatening our constitutional liberties, threatening the economic shutdown that's taking place that could destroy the economy and deprive people of their property without due process of law or just compensation as compelled under the Fifth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. The only way to do so is by sharing information, sharing the leaks, links to this story, sharing the links to other videos. Make sure you educate yourself. Make sure you inform others. Make sure you assert your rights, and make sure you prepare. And we'll have to create sort of a bumper sticker for that, for the Free America Law Center. People can go to freeamericalawcenter.com. That's one of the legal organizations I helped set up to try to establish this. It's run by independent people, but the goal is to make sure we get as many legal advisors as possible, lawyers as possible. Investigators and lawyers have agreed to donate their services across the country to assist wherever they can. We appreciate that, because this is a true emergency, an emergency of the deprivation of constitutional liberties, an emergency of the shutdown of our economy, an emergency that threatens the reelection of President Trump, one of the few people to stand up to this sort of institutional deep state policies and politics that are that inhibit true democracy from thriving in the United States. In fact, as someone pointed out to me today, increasingly the way in which some of these public health officials are talking about the virus sound a lot like some of the neocons and the warmongers talked about Afghanistan, that there's always an excuse to extend it, always an excuse to go on, that it's always sort of vague and nebulous what our objectives are, but the goalposts just keep getting moved and moved and moved, and the rights keep getting more and more restricted, and opportunity gets more and more limited, and more American lives are lost for no apparent effective outcome. And we're seeing something similar here, and where we're forfeiting and sacrificing more and more of our constitutional liberties, forfeiting and sacrificing more and more of our economic opportunities, seeing our economy shut down and have major exposure and major risk. So you're free to go to places like freeamericalawcenter.com. We'll try to get some bumper stickers and other things to help promote the independence of people so that they understand that their rights can be protected. They can be like Mike and assert their rights and in the process protect people's rights across the country. So thanks for your call. Let's go to let's see. I think it's Derek in Texas. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. So flat out, I'm a sex offender. And so I did my time, 5 years. I cannot protect myself with a firearm, though I'm well trained in firearms, but I can't buy one. The thing is for me, sir, is that I saw this 20 years ago where they just gradually dissipated the ability of the American man to protect themselves.
I mean, there's no question that what's happening now is, I mean, to a certain degree, felony restrictions are things that the Supreme Court has approved. So certain kinds of crimes are the basis to remove someone's gun rights. But what's happening here is people that have committed no crime at all, people that are not infected at all, are being told that they cannot assert their Second Amendment rights and Second Amendment liberties. And they're also being told they can't assert their First Amendment rights and liberties. They're being told they can't, in certain contexts, assert their Fourth Amendment rights, or their Fourth Amendment rights will be routinely and flagrantly violated without consequence as politicians brag about the fact that they're doing it. Or the Fifth Amendment rights to property, to pursue your occupation, to pursue your business within the due process standards and the against government taking without just compensation. That's routinely and regularly happening now across the country. So there's no question that there has been a constant erosion of constitutional liberties in a wide range of contexts. But what we're seeing right now is unparalleled and unprecedented. We're seeing it happen at a level that has never happened before. And we're seeing it happen to people that have been convicted of no crime whatsoever, not even been arrested or charged with a crime, and not found for any basis to pose a threat to their fellow neighbors in any way or any means. But they've used some of the language from prior mandatory vaccine campaigns, from prior disqualification of people from voting rights and gun ownership rights. They're treating everybody, our own citizens, as inherently and necessarily dangerous without meeting the standards that were previously required. And that goes to, and we're seeing this in general. Now, who is it we're supposed to turn to in this context? Who is it that's supposed to save us from all of this? Well, according to the Democratic Party, it's Joe Biden, who's been doing various press conferences, if you can call it that, out of, I guess, his home. And let's just take a recent example of Joe Biden's ability to communicate and whether he gives you an assurance of safety and security. Let's look at video clip number 8.
Said the stupidest thing ever. You keep talking.
And in order to avoid that, those very high numbers, we have to do at least several things. One, we have to depend on what the president's going to do right now. And first of all, he has to wait till the cases before anything happens. Look, the whole idea is he's got to get in place things that were shortages of.
I don't even really know where to start. What does that mean?
That's exactly the case. You have someone who, even he's given a script, even when he's only talking to a camera at home, and we don't have scripts here. I'm not using any kind of script. But here he has a script. He's in a controlled setting. He can say what he wants. And what's happening? He still can't make any sense. That's who's supposed to replace Donald Trump. That's who's supposed to be our next president. Does he make you feel safe? Does he make you feel secure? Particularly in an environment where governors, mayors, and local politicians all across the country are depriving people of their core constitutional liberties on a daily basis in a manner that's never happened in the history of this country? Is he supposed to make you safe and secure as to the economy rebounding when we're about to shut it down and have shut it down to a degree that has never happened in American economic history? That's supposed to be the answer to the problems that we currently see? No, the answer was sort of reflected in the movie V for Vendetta itself. If we go to sort of clip number 4, the key protagonist in the film reminds us that the goal of government is not to make people afraid of it, but the government should be responsive to the people. And the government should fear the people's willingness to assert their power to control government as their motivating direction, not find new excuses, new means, new mechanisms, new methods to terrify the people the government is intended to serve. So let's look at just a brief clip from there in video clip number 4.
I wish I wasn't afraid all the time, but I am.
People should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people.
That is sort of the core old foundational principle that our government was founded on, to keep people in control. It's what the Second Amendment is really all about. It's about not only the ability of individuals to defend themselves against other individuals in cases the state cannot do so. It's also the right of the individuals to defend themselves against wayward governments trying to impose unconstitutional restrictions on their behavior. In fact, if you go all the way back, you could find out that there are actually competing militias back in the old English days, and the only militias allowed to form were those that supported certain political apparatus within the state. And the ones that were resisting that, resisting the restriction on their liberty, restricting their opportunities, restricting their freedom and their property, those were disbanded and disallowed. And that's what led to some of the original Bill of Rights in the English form of government that established that, well, how do we make sure that we can have a little d democratic militia, that we can have ordinary individuals with the power to resist government tyranny, something where the government recognizes the power of the people, and instead of believing that their goal is to assert power over people, well, they said that would be the Second Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, previously recognized in Bill of Rights protections, even passed in England, passed in other states in the United States at the same time as the Second Amendment within various state constitutions, including 9 of the original 13 chartered states. They recognized that the Second Amendment enshrined that the power of government was about giving power to the people. We were not going to give an exclusive monopoly on either the tools or the means or legal right of violence or force or the threat of force to simply those in positions of political power. We were going to give the ordinary person the ability of self-survival, the ability of self-defense, the ability of self-governance. And that would happen through the Second Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. That's why it's there. That's how it has been there. That is why it must be enforced and respected and protected. And that is why it is not a coincidence. You see state-loving politicians all across the country try to become petty tyrants by disbanding this right, by disbanding the ability to assert this right throughout cities, counties, states across the nation. And the only thing that puts a check on it, the only thing that resists it, the only thing that can defend against it, the only way you get to keep and bear arms is the same way, the only way you can keep and bear your rights. And that is to assert those rights. That is to be like Mike and simply saying, you know what? Even though these three people are at my door, I see that they represent political power, state power, law enforcement power. That one's a fire marshal, one's a code official, one's a police officer. One can shut down my business entirely. One can shut down my ability to operate from here. And another one can put me in handcuffs and drag me off to jail. What did he do? Did he say, you know what, I'm just going to forego it. I'm just going to forfeit it. Yeah, it'd be a lot easier for me to just play ball. It'd be a lot easier for me to not question this. It'd be a lot easier for me to not contest this. Knowing that the risk to him was that he could be arrested and charged with a crime. And not only fined, but charged with a crime that could in turn deprive him of his ability to make a living. Deprive him of his ability to do his life profession and his life dream, which is to be able to train people in public in gun safety, to be able to give them the means of that self-protection, so that what potentially could have happened to his parents when their home was invaded by people out to harm them, that would not happen to other people here in Texas and across the country. That was his passion. It wasn't just his profession. It wasn't just his business. It wasn't just his occupation. It was his love. It's what he chose to do. It's who he chose to be. And here, all of that was at risk, and even more at risk if he simply asserted his rights, even more at risk because they could charge him with the misdemeanor, could take months or years to work out. And in the interim, bye-bye job, bye-bye profession, bye-bye your passion, bye-bye your pride, bye-bye the thing that led you to be where you are today. But what did he choose to do in that key moment when he faced a stress test like that? What was his reaction to that stress test? His reaction was to remember why he joined the United States Army in the first place, why he chose to defend this country in the first place. He didn't join the United States Army to defend some politician in Washington. He didn't join the United States Army to pursue some deep state objective overseas. He didn't join the United States Army because of the thrill of having a gun and power over other people. He joined the United States Army to defend what it meant to be American, to be American. That's why he joined the United States Army. And he joined the United States Army and served honorably for our country for the better part of a decade plus, because he believed in the American dream. And that American dream was not just defined in the way that Martin Luther King talked about, but in the way Martin Luther King talked about it, goes back to the core constitutional freedoms and liberties that this country represents. The light of liberty and the Statue of Liberty, where we saw that boat coming to help people just yesterday instead of this scary siren from the Empire State Building, was a reminder that it is our constitutional freedoms that are the foundation and fountain of that liberty. That's what it means to be an American. When I go abroad, when I talk to other people and say, what does it mean to be an American? It doesn't mean you have any particular race or religion or you come from a particular region. Heck, we don't even all talk the same. What it does mean is it means we the people. It means the Declaration of Independence. It means the Bill of Rights. If you go back into Rhode Island some years ago and you find a bunch of folks named Barnes in a small little town outside Providence, you'll find that when the Constitution came around, they said they would not vote for it until the Bill of Rights was added to it. And it was because of their demand that it happened, because of their assertion of their rights, because they chose to be like Mike, not just for life cereal, not just because of Michael Jordan and shoes, but someone that's an ordinary, everyday individual who fought and served for his country, standing up to three people standing at his door when the easy decision under the stress test was to forfeit, when the easy decision under the stress test was to quit. He chose to assert those rights, to defend those rights, because he didn't serve over a decade in the United States Army to see those rights forfeited and foregone overnight. In the same way that we are trying to protect elderly people all across the country, which is good, which is right. What we should not do is forfeit what they fought and died for and risked dying for decades and decades ago in World War II and through the Great Depression. They fought, as we talked about at the beginning of the show, they fought for 77 years of beautiful American freedom and liberty, not 78 years of Cuban tyranny. So let us not choose that kind of tyranny today. Let us be like Mike and assert the democratic freedoms and democratic liberties that are the foundation of what it means to be an American, that are the fountainhead of what America must be moving forward. And we can only do that by asserting those rights. We can only keep and bear arms by keeping and bearing those rights to the public. So be prepared, be ready, do what you can do to defend and protect yourself, do what you can do to be prepared, do what you can to persuade those in the public square of the importance of the issues we face, of the crisis that currently confronts us, to make sure and secure our constitutional liberties. Paul Revere is riding through all of our towns today, and he's calling out the cry for alarm today. So today is the time to do whatever you can to make America stay America, to make what being an American is remain an American. Because we are all in this together, not just in fighting a pandemic, but fighting the panic from the pandemic, fighting the politicians using it as a pretext to seize power. We often wonder, what would we have done if we were in that small town in New England back in the late 1700s when Paul Revere came going through town? Well, now we get that chance. We get the chance to be like Mike. We get the chance to assert, protect, and defend our constitutional freedoms and liberties, and each of one of you make that happen. You make that happen by supporting the sponsors of this show. You make that happen by sharing links and information. You make that happen by just talking to your friends and family. You make that happen because you're still an American. So keep the Statue of Liberty alive and its meaning and its true, the true flame of liberty, the true flame of freedom for the world.